Let us return to the book of Genesis this morning and read Genesis 28, verses 14, and then continue through Genesis 29 through verse 14. No, is that correct? Genesis 28, verse 18, through Genesis 29, verse 14. So Genesis 28, beginning at the 18th verse. Then Jacob rose early in the morning and took the stone that he had put at his head, set it up as a pillar and poured oil on top of it, and he called the name of that place Bethel, but the name of that city had been Luz previously. Then Jacob made a vow, saying, "If God will be with me and keep me in this way that I am going, and give me bread to eat and clothing to put on, so that I come back to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God. And this stone which I have set as a pillar shall be God's house, and of all that you give me, I will surely give a tenth to you." So Jacob went on his journey and came to the land of the people of the east. And he looked and saw a well in the field, and behold, there were three flocks of sheep lying by it. For out of that well they watered the flocks. A large stone was on the well's mouth. Now all the flocks would be gathered there, and they would roll the stone from the well's mouth, water the sheep, and put the stone back in its place on the well's mouth. And Jacob said to them, "My brethren, where are you from?" And they said, "We are from Haran." Then he said to them, "Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor?" And they said, "We know him." So he said to them, "Is he well?" And they said, "He is well. And look, his daughter Rachel is coming with the sheep." Then he said, "Look, it is still high day. It is not time for the cattle to be gathered together. Water the sheep and go and feed them." But they said, "We cannot until all the flocks are gathered together, and they have rolled the stone from the well's mouth. Then we water the sheep." Now while he was speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. And it came to pass, when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth, and watered the flock of Laban and his mother's brother. Then Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and wept. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's relative, and that he was Rebekah's son. So she ran and told her father. Then it came to pass, when Laban heard the report about Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him, embraced him, and kissed him, and brought him to his house. So he told Laban all these things, and Laban said to him, "Surely you are my bone and my flesh." And he stayed with him for a month. Now may God add his richest blessings to this reading of this portion of his holy, infallible word. So we return to this portion in the book of Genesis, and we read in here about Jacob and then his meeting with Laban, and we talked last week with respect to the blessing that God had given to Jacob. And let us be reminded that the greatest blessing that God gives to any of us is when he opens basically the gate of heaven to us. That means, by the way, that he pours down his grace upon us from heaven and draws us to his blessed Son, Jesus Christ. And now we read at this 18th verse that Jacob grows up early in the morning after that vision that he received of the angels ascending and descending upon that stairway that he had in the vision and so forth. And he took the stone that he had put at his head and set it up as a pillar and poured oil on it. And he called the name of the place Bethel. He said, well, this is basically, this is the house of God. But we look at this dealing that comes next. Jacob made a vow. And a vow before the Lord. He said, well, if God will be with me and keep me in this way that I am going, and give me bread to eat and clothing to put on, so that I come back to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God, and this stone which I have set as a pillar shall be God's house. And of all that you give me, I will surely give a tenth to you. Now, that's rather interesting, because Jacob hasn't made much of a movement yet toward God. God made a movement toward Jacob, blessed him, told him, you take a look to the north, the south, the east, the west, I'm going to give you all this land, I'm going to do it because I promised that to Abraham and to Isaac and now to you and so forth. And Jacob, well, he makes the pillar, he takes the stone that he laid upon his head on to sleep that night. And by the way, that sounds a little strange that you would sleep on a stone. And I know as a young person, I used to think, well, that didn't sound very comfortable at all. But I learned quickly a few years later when I was in basic training with the U.S. Army. And I was eventually got into a mortar company. And we fired these 4.5 millimeter mortar shells. They would go a distance of 19,000 yards. They're a pretty powerful little device. And they, when they went off, they made a pretty good boom. And I know that a number of times we were out on bivouac, out in the fields, and doing practice firing these mortars. Now, I was not myself a mortar man. I was the guy that ran the wire out to the forward post. You don't have that today. You would just take a cell phone and what have you. But we used to run the wire and use these wires to the telephone and so forth. And so I was used generally done for the day once the wire got laid and so forth. And I'd come back and I'd join in with the mortars. And it gets boring after a while. And you get tired and you want to take a little nap. I would take a little nap. And I'd prop my head up on a rock. It didn't bother me. It didn't feel too uncomfortable. But, yeah, it can be done. And so Jacob, he was slept on this rock. But I imagine this rock must have been a little larger than any that I ever had slept upon. But because he takes it and he must have turned it up somewhat. And if you say the size of a pillow, it would be up a few, maybe 2 feet in the air or something of that nature after it's stuck into the ground. And he's using that as a memorial. He pours oil on top of it and he calls the name of that place Bethel. And then he makes this vow and he says, well, keep, if you, Lord, if will of God will be with me and he'll keep me in the way that I am, he's making a deal here. Let's cut a deal, Lord. If you'll do this and this and this, then you'll be my Lord. I don't know, I remember seeing a movie one time with Burt Reynolds in it. I can't remember the name of it, but it had a pretty good little section that was made you laugh. He was in a shipwreck and he's trying to get to the land. They were on a yacht, and he's swimming and he's running out of breath and so forth, and he says, "Oh Lord, if you save me, I'll give you such and such of my wealth and what have you." And then he gets a little jolt of energy and he goes a little further, and finally he gets into where he can walk on the bottom of the ocean and walk toward land. And he's saying, "Well, Lord, I don't know if you'll really need 50%. Maybe 20% will do." And he keeps doing this, and he moves on and he gets on the land, and he's down to nothing. "Well, you don't need anything, God. You have everything." This is Jacob's life. That's Jacob's trying to cut a deal here, and he goes on. And what we see here, by the way, is something I think we have given thought to a number of times. God has great patience with his people. Now, we may not try and cut deals with God, but he have patience with us in many other things, and we're thankful for that. And this is what we're seeing with regards to Jacob. "This stone which I have set as a pillar shall be God's house, and of all that you give me, I will surely give a tenth to you." But remember Jacob's promise, or excuse me, the Lord's promise to Jacob was that, he would be with him. "And wherever he went, I'll be with you." Remember what Jesus says to us? Jesus says what? He promises to us that he will be with us forever. And that's God. God's saying to Jacob, "Look, wherever you go, I'll be with you, and I will bring you back to this place, Bethel." So now we read about Jacob. Verse in chapter 29 says, "So Jacob went on his journey and came to the land of the people of the east." Now, you know, when we speak about the blessings of God, what's the biblical definition of a blessing? The theological definition of a blessing? Well, it's basically this. Perhaps the meaning of the word blessing can be most accurately understood when these three etymological meanings, blood, consecration, praise, and good fortune, are taken in concert. In Genesis 12:1-3, and I'm reading this, this comes from I'm trying to think of what the name of it. I got it off of the internet. It's a blog or whatever you want to call a website that I frequently will look at. Got Questions Ministries. And the question I noticed was, what does blessing mean? And so I just want to share this with you. In Genesis 12:1-3, God makes a promise to Abraham, saying, "I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." Now, God is promising, you see, good fortune and a good future to the descendants of Abraham. And he is saying that others will gain fortune through him. It can be said that all who believe in the God of Israel are consecrated with blood, the blood of Jesus Christ, through faith. Now, the Hebrew word for blessing is barak, and it means literally to kneel. And so we recognize that too. You see, in the Old Testament, when somebody was being blessed, and that even to this day, when we ordain an elder or a pastor or a deacon, we have him come and he kneels before us, you see, and to receive the blessing of the putting on of hands. And we recognize this, you see, the various things in the scriptures. The Hebrew word means then to kneel, and when it's used in this context, it indicates a relationship between a man who adores God by kneeling and God who benefits men with his presence. Another word translated blessing is the Hebrew word esher, which indicates a state of happiness. You find this in the, oftentimes in the Psalms. For an example, we're familiar with that Psalm which tells us what? Blessed is the man, you see, to whom God does not impute immunity. That's basically the word esher. Happy's that man. That man is happy. And he's happy because basically God is directing him to pursue the path that God can walk on with him. And this is something that's also important. So we find that word oftentimes in Psalms and Proverbs. In fact, the matter is, when we find the word blessing in the Old Testament, you find it's there 600 times or more in the Old Testament. Important word within our Christian faith. When the Psalm says, blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners. Very first Psalm, you see. He is saying, you will be happy if you do not walk in the counsel of the wicked. And that's very true, generally. And we would say that. excuse me. Obedience to God, you notice, is not a prerequisite for salvation. Now, that may sound strange because we know a lot of people will say, well, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to do this and the other thing. And we know there are people who say, well, you can't drink caffeine. That's just improper. That's not good for you. Let's say you have a whole, you have a number of religions that are based on the fact that, well, if you eat this food, then you'll be in good shape spiritually. Well, there's no food in this world that I know of that will put you in good shape spiritually. In fact, when I look up some of the stuff on the internet about foods today, I find there's hardly a food that does anything good for you. And I'm serious about that. You go read some of these articles and you see the tomato's the worst thing in the world you can have. There's a whole bunch of doctors that say that. No, you shouldn't ever eat a tomato because of the lectins that's in it. And you've got to have this pill or that pill to temper it, so to speak, what have you. Peanuts, they're not good for you. In fact, no nut that is not a true nut, like a peanut that comes from the ground, they're not good for you. The best nut in the world to eat for you, by the way, is the macadamia nut. That should make macadamia farmers even happier because, boy, they're already high enough. And so forth. And so we look at this and we see what times often takes place. Obedience to God, and we want to be obedient to God, but obedience to God's not a prerequisite for salvation. While we were still sinners, says the Apostle Paul, Christ died for us. And obedience to God and living according to His Word is a recipe for living for happiness in life. We know that, you see. Listen to Proverbs chapter 3, verses 1 through 4. My son, do not forget my law, but let your heart keep my commandments. For length of days and long life and peace they will add to you. Let not mercy and truth forsake you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart, and so find favor and high esteem in the sight of God and man. So we look at this. We see, well, if obedience is not prerequisite for salvation, what is? Prerequisite for salvation does not come out of us. Prerequisite for salvation comes to us from God. The work of His grace within our heart and the effectual application of the Word by the Spirit, you see, to draw us to God, to incline our hearts toward His. And so we want to understand that very thoroughly. This is where Jacob is in his life. He's not there yet. He understands that, yes, God has come down and spoke to him. God has blessed him, told him, this is a blessing. My faithfulness to Abraham and Isaac, and now it's coming to you, Jacob. Jacob, oh, I'm thankful for that, Lord. But if you do this, and you do this, and you do this, then I'll do this. Not going to work. And we're going to see that, you see. Because if we do not follow in obedience with a confession to our God, we're going to live lives of misery and discomfort. And this takes place in the life of Jacob. Jacob, he went on his journey, came to the land of the people of the east, and he looked and he saw a well in the field. This was a wonderful thing. He's there, he's coming to the well, and he sees these men coming with their sheep. There's three of them there with their flocks. And he says to them, or they said to him, I guess. Jacob said to them, my brothers, where are you from? And they said, well, we're from Haran. Then he said to them, do you know Laban, the son of Nahor? And they said, well, we know him. And so he said to them, is he well? They said, yes, he is well. And look, his daughter Rachel's coming with the sheep. Then he said, look, it's still high day. It's not time for the cattle to be gathered together. Water the sheep and go and feed them. But they said, we can't until all the flocks are gathered together and they have rolled the stone from the well's mouth. Then we water the sheep. Now, that's interesting, you see. Jacob's in a hurry here. Oh, I want to get there. I want to get to Bethel. I want to get to see Laban and so forth. And he wants to rush these individuals. And it's rather interesting, you see, because we look and think of it in our world. We have this whole thing today that's called canceled culture. We want to cancel the culture in our country. Jacob wants to cancel the culture here of the people in the East. Well, I see you're here and you're waiting, what have you, but I want to hurry. I want to get there and water the flock. So forth, let's get out of here. No, that's not the case. Can't do that. He continues his journey, comes to them, and we put this scene in perspective, and we note there's a bit of impatience on Jacob's part. He lives by his wits. Man of tricks, man of deceit, man of living by his wits. He was anxious to reach his decision, meet with Laban. We see something then of the routines and the customs of the time, and no shepherd was to be alone at the well. And so the shepherds would wait until all the flocks were gathered, And then, however many men it would take, whether it's one or men of three or what have you, then they would roll the stone from the mouth of the well. Jacob notes the time of the day. Well, the sun was still high. It was not time for the flocks to be gathered. But Jacob told the shepherds to water the sheep and take them back to pasture. Their answer was, we can't. Not until all the flocks are gathered. Now, there was no actual law that we've ever read in the ancient times, biblical or otherwise. There was no law requiring a set time for the rolling away of the stone from the mouth of the well. But there was a custom among the people that was to be observed. And it was a matter of manners and of courtesy to be extended so that all the shepherds would be able to water their flocks. See, civility is not a matter of laws. Civility is basically a matter of manners and customs and courtesies. Breaking them brings about dire consequences. Jacob had yet to learn those things. Jacob met Rachel at the well, and when he told her that he was a relative of her father and a son of Rebekah, Rachel quickly went to tell her father. Laban came out to meet Jacob, and invited him to stay with him. After a month had passed, Laban said to Jacob, because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what should your wages be? Jacob meets his first match. He meets Laban, and Laban is just as tricky and deceitful as was Jacob. It would seem that the visit at first went pretty well, and that Jacob was treated thereby as a guest. He took part in some of the necessary labor of the household, but he was not a full participant, being still a guest. And it's here that the dealings begin. Laban said to Jacob, because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what should your wages be? Now, this is a job offer. It's offering Jacob a job, you see. It's also the offer to Jacob of a wife. For when Laban first brought him to his house, Jacob told him the reason why he had come. Verse 13. So he told Laban all of these things. We learn from the later verses of this chapter and from chapter 30 that follows that Jacob apparently told Laban and his household of the promise of God to him. For Leah, Rachel, and Laban all use the covenant name of God, which is Jehovah, in reference to him. Jacob and Laban are in a duel of wits. Each has in mind their own interest. Jacob desires Rachel for a wife. Laban wants a shepherd for his flocks and a husband for his daughters. Jacob, who knew something about deceit, was about to be outwitted. Jacob tries to live by his wits. How many of you, through the course of your living, at some point or another, have tried to live by your wits? My inclination would be to say all of you. I know I have. Over the years, I know I learned, as a bit of maturity, I learned not to be so stupid, not to try to live by my wits, because our wits are very misleading. And they were for Jacob, and they were for Laban. Laban's daughter, Leah, and Rachel were placed before Jacob. For Jacob, the choice was easy. Rachel was beautiful of form and appearance, the 17th verse. It would seem from the contrast of this passage and what ensues that both Leah and Rachel were beautiful of form. But of Leah, we are told, had delicate eyes. Now, that's what we would speak of as a euphemism. Now, years ago when we lived up in the Dakotas, when there was an expression, I think it was one of the cutest expressions I've ever heard of, still is to this day. When they would talk to you and they would say to somebody, "Oh, he's a strong person," or "she's a strong person," we took a while to figure it out till we would see those individuals. And usually the individuals were strong width-wise. It was a euphemism that they used. Now, this is a euphemism that is being used that Leah had delicate eyes. My assumption is, and I don't know because we don't have the biblical word that says this, but delicate eyes must have been something like cross-eyed or lame eye on one eye, you know, that would look one way and the other one look the other. We look at this. Jacob loved Rachel because she was beautiful of form and appearance. But Rachel, I mean Leah, was also beautiful, but she did have this one little thing that perhaps bothered Jacob. And weak eyes, which most likely means something like either cross-eyed or lame eye or something. Jacob loved Rachel, so he said, "I will serve you 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter." And Laban said, "It is better that I give her to you than that I should give her to another man. Stay with me." Now, as we come through this, we recognize there's some deceit going on, both with Jacob and with Laban. Jacob agrees basically in this deal. Laban's speaking half truths. He'll give Rachel to Jacob, but not in quite the fashion that Jacob is thinking, you see. Jacob served Laban for Rachel 7 years, but got Leah. Those years seemed to Jacob as only a few days because of the love that he had for her. Now, it's not fully clear whether Jacob served 7 years and then an additional 7 years, total 14, before he obtained Rachel for his wife. It's possible that he served a week after receiving Leah as his wife, and then Laban gives Rachel to Jacob, and then he continues to serve Laban for 7 more years. That's a possibility. We don't know that fully. It was a deceitful act on the part of Laban. There was a dueling wedding, basically, Jacob versus Laban, and Laban comes out the winner. Behold, it was Leah. That's the one whom he had on that wedding night. And then he has to wait until he gets Rachel. Jacob's household was also a dueling household, Leah and Rachel, both vying for the love of their husband, Jacob. Reminded of that hymn that we sing so often, "What a Friend We Have in Jesus." And we find in it, "Oh, what peace we often forfeit. Oh, what needless pain we bear. All because we do not carry everything to God in prayer." We have that beautiful verse in Philippians 4, verse 6. "In nothing be anxious, but in everything, by prayer and supplications and with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known of God." Jacob has been buffeted by God, and so also has Leah and Rachel and Laban. As to Jacob, some might say it was poetic justice. If it were a matter of justice, it was God's own justice. But there was more at stake here than simply justice. Jacob was a son of the covenant of whom the promise of God was given. He was not in the place that he belonged. No, he wasn't in that place for 7 years, nor was he in that place for 14 years, nor for the subsequent days after that he stayed with Laban and the eastern people. This was not his home. Just as you and I, by the way, living in this new dispensation under the new covenant, this world is not our own. We're but strangers here, and we will always be strangers here if we are in the service of God and seek that. We are the children of God through His covenant of grace. We're not in that place as Jacob was not in that place. Through Jacob's own deceit and Laban's also, this duel continued, and Jacob was never anything more than a stranger in Laban's household. And this was not of his design, but the decree of God who promised him, "Behold, I am with you always, and will keep you wherever you go, and will bring you back to this land, where I will not leave you until I have done what I have spoken." When God's covenant children are not where they belong, through their own will, by their own desires, by their own plans, or by their own deceiving, or by their own wit and wisdom, He makes their lives miserable and discomforting. Remember righteous Lot, of whom it is written that God delivered righteous Lot, who was oppressed by the filthy conduct of the wicked, for that righteous man dwelling among them tormented his righteous soul from day to day by seeing and hearing their lawless deeds. Then the Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of temptations and reserve the unjust under punishment for the day of judgment. That may seem like an extreme example, and thankfully, owing to the grace of God, it is. And we look in Jacob's life and we see that though his misery and his discomfort was less extreme than that of Lot's, Jacob still was also in the need of deliverance from Laban and from himself. And God was providing it by increasing Job's discomfort and misery. Proverbs chapter 3, we read in verses 1 through 4, but verses 5 and 6 tells us this. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct your paths. That is good advice. That's good for you. It's good for me. It's good for all of God's children. Do not look to yourselves. Do not depend upon your own strength and wisdom and wit, for that will bring us misery and discomfort. Do not lean unto your own understanding. Look to Christ, your deliverer, and cast your burdens at his cross. Amen.